You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Erin Wager-Miller. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, October 15th, 2018.
Right around 2003-2004, Google was getting ready to launch their IPO on the NASDAQ, and I thought, you know what, if I don't figure out a way to ride this wave, I'm gonna regret not taking advantage of it.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with area entrepreneur Pat East about the Dimension Mill, a tech incubator and co-work renovation in downtown Bloomington. That's coming up on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, the League of Women Voters of Bloomington-Monroe County explores the issue of gerrymandering and redistricting. Why your voter districts are shaped the way they are and what you can do about it on this week's edition of A Minute of Civics, produced in partnership with WFHB and the League of Women Voters of Bloomington-Monroe County. But first, your daily headlines.
Our top story this half hour, Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill appealed to the Supreme Court on Friday. Hill is asking the nation's highest court to implement restrictions on abortion. Those increased restrictions were passed by the state legislature during then-Governor Mike Pence's administration in 2016. The abortion statutes, called House Enrolled Act 1337, seek to prohibit women in the state from getting an abortion because of the fetus's developmental disability or race. A second part of House Enrolled Act 1337 also sought for women who received an abortion to bury or cremate their fetal remains. In two separate legal challenges, regional appeals courts struck down both measures of House Enrolled Act 1337. The Seventh Circuit Appeals Court cited federal Supreme Court decisions on increasing abortion regulations, including cases like Roe v. Wade, which have found states should not further regulate a woman's constitutional right to her body. Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill's request for a Supreme Court to take up House Enrolled Act 1337 comes after the second appointment to the bench by President Donald Trump. Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed along party lines to the nation's highest court on October 6th after being accused by three women of sexually assaulting them. House Enrolled Act 1337 was co-authored by Martinsville Republican Peggy Mayfield. It has been found unconstitutional by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals after being challenged by the Indiana chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union and Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky. Tomorrow we'll hear from Indiana University law professor Don Johnson during the Daily Local News. Johnson is a legal expert in reproductive law and the Constitution. That interview is tomorrow on the Daily Local News.
Vice President Mike Pence was in Indianapolis over the weekend. The former Indiana governor turned vice president spoke during a campaign fundraiser for Indiana Republicans. Pence also spoke on the campaign trail for Indiana Republican Senate nominee Mike Braun. Braun is running against incumbent Democrat Senator Joe Donnelly this November. On Friday, the vice president joined Indiana Republicans, including Governor Eric Holcomb, Senator Todd Young, and Secretary of State Connie Lawson for a party dinner in Indianapolis. Pence used the opportunity to attack national Democrats over the confirmation hearing of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. On Saturday, Pence stumped for Braun at the J.W. Marriott in Indianapolis. Pence spoke as part of Indiana Republicans' The Right Track Results Tour, a statewide media and campaign blitz ahead of the November 6th midterm election.
Democrats were also campaigning this weekend. On Friday night, former Indiana University basketball star turned Indianapolis Pacer Victor Oladipo joined former Vice President Joe Biden in Hammond, Indiana. Oladipo and Biden both stumped for incumbent Democrat Senator Joe Donnelly. The Donnelly campaign had announced the rally in Hammond to be headlined by the former vice president, but Oladipo's appearance and endorsement of the incumbent Democratic senator was unexpected. A Donnelly campaign manager told the Indianapolis Star that Oladipo had reached out to see how he could get involved with the campaign months ago. Donnelly and Republican Senate nominee Mike Braun will debate in Indianapolis on October 30th. The debate, which includes Libertarian candidate Lucy Brenton, will be the second hosted by the nonpartisan Indiana Debate Commission.
The Bloomington City Council unanimously approved the city's 2019 budget last week, despite concerns over several controversial elements. Contained in the budget is an $800,000 payment on a proposed $10 million Parks Bicentennial bond. Council member Isabel Piedmont-Smith took issue with the line item, saying the city had more pressing needs than creating more trails and greenways.
I love trails and greenways. I love trees. I would love to see our alleys improved. But meanwhile, we have people dying of addiction. We have people who cannot afford to live anywhere near Bloomington. We have people that have to go either detox in the hospital or, you know, on their own in jail, which is just torture. We need a detox center. We need more solutions for the homeless, and we need more addictions treatment. And, you know, these are basic human needs in our community that I feel are much more important.
In explaining the proposed bond, Deputy Mayor Rick Reinisen said it was an investment in the city's future quality of life.
I think the overarching emphasis for this bond issue is to leave a legacy for future generations. The mayor has talked about the fact that the folks before us, the folks that sat in your seats for decades before and centuries before, made decisions that affected our quality of life and what we all enjoy today about Bloomington. And celebrating 200 years, the mayor wanted to do something to leave those kind of things for the next generations to come. Some of it would have been in our surveys, which I know the councilors are aware of, the park surveys that suggest trails are really important to our community. So those are an easy sell because they always get high support from all of the residents of Bloomington.
But Piedmont-Smith said the city is already investing in future quality of life with its construction of the $34 million Switchyard Park.
So I just don't think, given all the problems that we're facing, that another $10 million of debt that we're going to be paying $600,000 for the debt service on is a good investment.
The Herald Times reports the bond would increase property taxes by 3% per $100 of assessed value. The city council has yet to approve the park's bicentennial bond. The bond must first be approved by the Bloomington Park Board. Piedmont Smith also took issue with the creation of a nighttime ambassador position. The position acts as a liaison between bars and restaurants, law enforcement, and city administrators. The position is one of many improvements suggested by Mayor Hamilton's Downtown Safety and Civility Task Force.
But even if we look at their task force report, I think there are much more important and more pressing needs to be addressed. For example, having public restrooms downtown, which is something that we on council have been talking about for several years, and we have not seen the proposal come forward. And that's a disappointment to me that we don't have that in this budget. That is one of the biggest and most disgusting problems that downtown businesses have. And it's a matter of dignity for people who do not have a place to go during the day.
Piedmont Smith went on to say the responsibility of liaising should be shared.
This is one of many examples where Indiana University should be helping us with the problem. And I know that Mayor Hamilton and his administration have had some, you know, regular meetings with IU, and I appreciate that outreach, but I think more needs to happen. It takes two to tango, so I think it's incumbent upon IU to also reach out and help deal with some of the issues that come about when you have thousands of 21-year-olds drinking late at night.
Council member Steve Volin spoke in support of creating an after-hours ambassador. Given his district lies in the heart of the city, he said he was tired of being the de facto liaison. The city's 2019 budget includes a 2% raise for city employees. It creates or changes 14 new jobs in total at a cost of $1.4 million to taxpayers.
Monroe County's Solid Waste Management District is losing money recycling plastics and glass. Operations Director Scott Morgan told the district's board of directors on October 11th that plastics have always been tough to sell.
Looking at plastics, plastics have always been tough for us because we only get less than, 50 cents on the dollar. So we're receiving a lot less than we potentially could. But in 17, we lost almost $9,000. And in 18, because the markets in plastic, which we've all talked about a lot, we're virtually receiving nothing for plastic. And we're losing, obviously, a lot of money on plastics. But again, the volumes are still solid. So again, if the markets rebound and we can do better domestically, hopefully those numbers will look a little better.
The numbers reflected in Morgan's financial report are based on the county's recycling contract with Republic Services. He also covered the cost of recycling glass, metals, and cardboard. According to Morgan, the revenue for glass is good. It's the hauling cost that's daunting.
Again, we lost about $23,500 in 17, and unfortunately, we're virtually on pace for the same amount looking at 18. Just to put it in perspective for the revenue, we receive $40 a ton for clear glass, which is really pretty good, and $21.50 for the green and brown mix. Again, the transportation is what's so detrimental to this process, and a lot of entities and programs have simply stopped taking glass entirely because of the transportation cost and the fact that you're hauling a little bit of air and the weight is so significant. So we're really one of the few that are still taking glass, particularly in these quantities.
Board member Julie Thomas said constituents ask her why the county continues to recycle glass at a cost.
Well, our mission is to reduce the amount of waste going into the landfill. And there are times when the market, like right now, is so bad because of the impact of China's decision making. I've been reading some really interesting articles lately about how there's a discussion about this will be turning around because some domestic processors of recycled material, they're thinking, are going to be coming online. And if that happens, that would help the price. But the question is, do we want this in the landfill, or when we have some items that cost us more money to haul than we get in revenue, are we okay with that? And philosophically, we've always been okay with that because we understand that there's a price to be paid for keeping material out of the landfill and fulfilling our mission sometimes.
Board member Isabel Piedmont-Smith initiated a discussion about using glass versus plastics.
Do you recommend to environmentally conscious consumers that they buy things in plastic instead of in glass?
Glass is better. It's just more expensive to transport. That's the key. But there are certainly markets for glass. I mean, Strategic Materials in Indianapolis, where we send our glass to, they can use all the glass they can get. Glass is used in insulation and some of the other materials. So there is a need for recycled glass.
You can reuse glass versus plastic. So if you buy glass, you're going to reuse it.
Well, and when manufacturers create glass jars and bottles, they're not using petroleum products like they do when they create plastic containers. So,
board member Cheryl Munson asked Morgan about the county's practice for shipping the glass.
Do the glass bottles haul as bottles, jars and bottles, or are they crushed?
Currently, everything that we receive stays in its current form, so we do not alter the form prior to transportation.
Does that have an effect on the cost of hauling?
It does. If we had the ability to centralize the glass and then crush it, essentially making it easier to transport, we would. However, we would probably then have to pay two transportation costs, one from its origination to a consolidation point, and then from Bloomington up to Indianapolis.
Thomas said the hauling costs for glass could be cheaper by rail, but the county doesn't currently have that capability. By contrast, Morgan reported metals have always been a solid revenue stream for the county. Cardboard, though, is up and down.
Again, in 17, we did very well. Cardboard has always been a good one for us. And in 18, volumes are still fairly good, But as you all know, the markets are certainly down, and that number definitely reflects the fact that the markets are down. And you're going to start seeing that. That definitely has an impact on the revenue that we're seeing. But the volumes are still good, and that's encouraging for us. And eventually, we hope that the markets will rebound and those numbers will get a little stronger.
The county has been examining an additional way to keep waste out of the landfill, creating a composting facility. The Solid Waste Management District contracted with Kessler Consulting on an organic waste recovery analysis. The district's executive director, Tom McGlaskin, Jr., told the board a draft of that analysis will be available for discussion in the board's November 8th meeting. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Aaron Wagermiller.
And I'm Benedict Jones. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington. Pat East is one of Bloomington's premier high-technology innovators. He is president of Hennepin Marketing, a pay-per-click operation, and is an area angel investor. Along with Indiana University and city officials, East is hoping to encourage Bloomington to become a high-tech destination. He speaks with host Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk Extra.
How did you get to this area, the high-tech information technology marketing area, from English?
So the way I got from being an English major at Wabash to CEO of my own digital advertising agency, is that I took a class at Wabash called Business and Technical Writing, and a lot of it was focused on how to write your resume and tell a story with that. And the story I could tell at Wabash was I did a lot of alumni and public relations for the college and for my university. And so I really built my resume around that. There happened to be a Wabash alum who started a company here in Bloomington called Author Solutions. And so I actually interviewed with him. He was an alum in my fraternity as well as a Wabash graduate. And so since all of my resume was focused on alumni and public relations, they actually had an open position there around author promotions. And so that's how I ended up in Bloomington and working at Author Solutions right around 2000. And, you know, I did a lot of author promotions for Author Solutions at the time. It was called First Books Library then. It's since changed their name to Author Solutions. And so I did a lot of author promotions. That turned into a position at Author Solutions where I was not just fulfilling the services we would sell, but I would actually create the services we would sell. Mm-hmm. That turned into more of a corporate marketing role where I was generating leads and publicity for the company. And that's really where I learned how to do pay-per-click advertising. We did a lot of pay-per-click and a lot of
email marketing. They were already in it.
They were, yes, sir, they were in it. And so the way that we actually got into it was Author Solutions was built on direct mail, so buying names and addresses from companies, magazines like Writer's Digest, people that we would know would be interested in publishing a book. And so we would buy these names and addresses from Writer's Digest, send them a letter, they would call in or hit our website and become a lead. And right around probably 2001, 2002, the post office increased our postal rates twice in 1 year. And I just did the math and said, hey, if the post office continues to do this twice every year, even once every 2 years, eventually at some point the economics of this don't make sense for us. And since this is how we built a business, this is not a good road for us to go down.
Not sustainable.
Exactly. And so so we did a little bit of research and eventually decided we would try our hand at pay-per-click advertising. My boss and I spent maybe 2 or 3 days coming up with the right keyword we were trying to advertise on. And once we did that, we started buying traffic and sending it to the website. Within the first month, we quintupled the number of leads, and that's how we grew from around 40 employees to 200, 6 million to 20 million inside of 4 years.
The boss must have loved you.
The boss and I are still good friends. Yes. And so that's a really long way of describing how I went from English major at Wabash to CEO of my own agency. The pay-per-click works so well at Author Solutions that right around 2003, 2004, Google was getting ready to launch their IPO on the NASDAQ. And I thought, you know what, if I don't figure out a way to ride this wave, I'm gonna regret not taking advantage of it.
Huh.
And so I decided between email marketing and pay-per-click advertising, I would do pay-per-click advertising, and gave notice on a Monday. Boss comes in my office on a Tuesday and says, how would you like for us to be your first client? They've been a client for 14 years. Yeah, and that's how I started the company.
Basically, sure, you're a business person. You're an entrepreneur, but the way I look at it, seeing all these things that you're involved with, you want more than just your own company or yourself to succeed. You want others to succeed and beyond even that, to thrive.
That's right. Yeah. I started Hannapin 14 years ago out of a spare bedroom in our house. And really, at that time, I had to go to Indianapolis to get a lot of the resources I did and a lot of the mentorship. And building and starting a business should be a lot easier. And so we're really trying to, with projects like the Dimension Mill or the Bloomington Technology Partnership, I really want to make it easier for founders and entrepreneurs to make it easier to build their own companies here and to be able to get the resources here.
But these guys are going to compete with you.
Maybe. The companies that will figure this out, whether I help them or provide resources to help them, they're going to figure it out on their own. But, so the companies that I really want to help are the ones that maybe couldn't get started otherwise. So I really believe it's a rising tide lifts all ships mentality, and that if I help folks, ultimately it's going to make Bloomington stronger, which creates a better employee talent pool for my company to recruit from, which makes my company stronger, which attracts other companies here to Bloomington. And so it's a nice virtuous cycle.
You seem to like the idea of lots of competitors. It sort of reminds me of in the shopping mall world, you know, you like to have two big anchors at either end because they drive each other's business.
Yeah, that's a very similar concept. The companies here in Bloomington, while I may not compete with a company like Periodic, who does online scheduling, or Cheddar, who does online billing, we do compete for a lot of the same employees. But employees aren't going to want to live in Bloomington if there's not a lot of good choices to select from, right? If it's only Hannapin Marketing, I get my pick of the folks who want to live in Bloomington, but there's not going to be a lot of folks that want to live in Bloomington that only want to work for one company, right?
Right.
And so having competition is definitely good for everybody. It keeps everybody on their toes. It creates growth, and growth creates opportunities for folks.
Now, where does the name Hannapin come from?
That's a really good story. So Hannapin, I'll tell you the headline and then tell you the story behind it. So Hannapin is the Filipino word for search. And so since we do search engine marketing, that's where that comes from. The way I came up with the name was around 2004, I was looking for a name for the company, and there was this really kind of niche trend of naming your internet marketing company after a one-word Greek or one-word Latin phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, you know, that's kind of neat, but it's going to fall out of favor pretty quickly. It's going to date.
Because everybody's doing it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to do it. There's no actual connection to why you would name your company a one-word Greek word, for instance.
Right.
And so I thought, well, you know, maybe if I can choose a Filipino word. My family's from the Philippines. My mom was born and raised there and immigrated to the United States in the 60s. And I thought, well, if I could choose a Filipino word, that way it means something close to me, that would make sense. And, you know, all the great domain names were taken then. And so this was a really good way to get a cheap domain name too, mm-hmm. and have it mean something to me. So Hanapin is the Filipino word for search, and I tacked on marketing onto that. And that's how I came up with Hanapin Marketing.
Pat East, angel investor, entrepreneur, founder and CEO of Hanapin Marketing, thanks for joining us on Big Talk.
Thank you for having me.
That was Pat East of Hanapin Marketing speaking with Big Talk's Michael Glapp about the Dimension Mill and other innovation-related things here in Bloomington, Indiana. Full episodes of Big Talk air Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. right here on WFHB.
Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
A Minute of Civics is produced by WFHB in partnership with the League of Women Voters of Bloomington Monroe County.
Hello, I'm Betty Greenwell with the League of Women Voters of Bloomington Monroe County, and I'm here today with Jim Allison, who's also with the League.
Hi, Betty.
Hi. Jim, you and I have talked before about gerrymandering, where dominant parties adjust their district lines to secure more than their fair share of the seats in Congress or the state legislature. I wonder what our state and federal courts can do about it. It's not likely that the state legislators would correct a situation they've created to give themselves an advantage.
You're so right about that, but the courts could do a lot. Start at the top with the Supreme Court of the United States. The Supreme Court has dealt with gerrymandering before, most recently with gerrymandering in Wisconsin, where one party ended up with a much bigger share of the seats in the state legislature than its share of the popular vote would have warranted. This was a clear subversion of the representative government on which this nation was founded.
And what happened there?
Well, the plaintiffs thought they had a strong constitutional argument based on the 14th Amendment, due process and equal protection. In effect, they were saying, the gerrymander devalues my vote without my permission.
Well, that sounds like a reasonable argument to me.
Me too, but the court did not agree. By a 7-2 vote, the court sent the plaintiffs back home without even considering the constitutional merits of their argument.
Why would they do that?
Well, there's a technicality called lack of standing, lack of enough injury to justify a lawsuit. In effect, the court said to the plaintiffs, you are asking us to order a redistricting of the whole state of Wisconsin, but all you gave us in court was one witness who claimed injury, and he said the gerrymander had so devalued his vote that he no longer bothered to vote. But all is not lost. If you return with evidence of widespread injury in district after district, we'll probably admit standing and hear your case on its constitutional merits.
Actually, that sounds pretty promising.
It does.
Do you think the plaintiffs will try again?
I do, and I think the court will agree to hear their case again.
But what about the new composition of the Supreme Court? Who knows whether the new court will decide in favor of the Wisconsin plaintiffs or against them?
Well, that's true. We'll just have to wait and see. But if the court does compel Wisconsin to reform, you can bet that other states will soon follow, including our state of Indiana.
But what about state courts, like the Supreme Court of North Carolina?
Well, like Wisconsin's Supreme Court, North Carolina's Supreme Court took a very dim view of its severely gerrymandered status. It even ordered reform before the November election. But legal delays have made it too late for that. Both sides are dug in now, and the outcome is uncertain.
Well, if the courts are tied up, maybe it's up to the people. There's a proposal on the ballot in Michigan that will give voters there an opportunity to decide whether to replace their current redistricting system, which is dominated by the legislature, with a bipartisan redistricting commission that's completely independent of the legislature.
Well, Betty, what can we do in Indiana?
Here, we, the voters, can tell our legislators and our governor that we want reform, that we're willing to vote for a change. Write them, phone them, email them, visit them in the state house. Your state house. Let them know that we want a fair districting process.
Yes, and what we can strive for is a bipartisan redistricting commission independent of the legislature. If other states can have that, and many states do, why not us?
That's right. And we can start making ourselves heard today, as early voting in Indiana is underway.
Let's get out and vote.
A Minute of Civics is produced by WFHB in partnership with the League of Women Voters of Bloomington Monroe County.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Sarah Vaughn in partnership with CATS Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
A Minute of Civics is produced by Susan Gloaz and Elaine Gall with help from WFHB News Director Wes Martin and members of the League of Women Voters of Bloomington Monroe County. Our engineer is Wes Martin with help from Chris Hack. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumstein, Scott Schmadeke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Aaron Wagermiller.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for Kite Line, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.